Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, here with my co-host, Judy Davis, and big thank you this week. I just wanted to put out there, love when you guys send us email, things you liked or didn't like or you're looking for. And you know, we had a couple emails from Kara and Joanna. Thank you for your questions and your guest suggestions, especially that because we're gathering info for upcoming shows and planning out 2019. So if you have questions, topics you want us to cover, or guests you'd like to hear from, email us. You can reach us at connect@mightyparenting.com or go to mightyparenting.com and hit the contact info. So today's show, we are looking at finances, but we are looking at it from a different angle. We're going to talk about what makes sense for us as parents to pay for our kids as they get older and they start going through teen and 20-something years and launching, and where we should really draw those lines and say no, because one, hey, our kids need to learn financial responsibility. They need to understand how to manage this. And two, we don't want to end up spending our retirement years living in their basement. You know, we joke about that a lot with kids going, oh, they're not launching, they're living on our couch. Well, I don't want to be living on my kid's couch either. And, you know, we're joking about it and it's funny, but it could happen. You know, deciding, making big financial decisions now is going to affect our future and our retirement, which affects our kids' future. And I know in our family, this has been coming up over the last few years. You start hitting those, you know, end of high school and figuring out college stuff, and then they get to college and all these other different things come up. They want to travel. They want to go visit friends. They have a conference to go to. They want to study abroad. All great experiences, but does it make sense, you know, for us to cover it or not? And that's what I'm really looking forward to digging into today. Judy, I know you guys have had stuff come up in your life too.
Right. And, you know, I'm just grateful. Looking back on it now, we have been very fortunate that our kids became pretty financially independent pretty early on. And I don't know if it's because of our being in the military community and the fact that we move every 3 years and they kind of have stayed put in Texas. I'm not sure, but you know, we haven't had that issue with our kids. However, I can totally see it coming up with my grandkids, because our financial situation right now is very different than when our kids were in their teens and 20s after we had made a whole bunch of very poor financial decisions. So understanding those boundaries is really key to not only helping them get the skills like you talked about, but in helping us be sure that we're financially set for the long term.
And Judy, I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I'm laughing over here. I get what you're saying about, you know, better financial situation now means that you'd have to make decisions about the grandkids. But let's also be truthful. You are a sucker as a grandma, and you want to know when you should be a real sucker and when you need to actually kind of take a more firm role, because you will just buy your grandkids anything.
Yeah, and I am a person that my nature is very, I don't want to say too giving, but I am someone that if somebody really wants or needs something, I will go without myself and provide it to them. And I think that that is why I am so interested in having this chat with Lucas Caceres, because Lucas has this background and interest in finances that started a long time ago in his first years of employment at a local community bank. And he discovered the impact of financial planning and what it did to people's lives. He is a graduate of Colorado State University with a focus on financial planning. I mean, how helpful in your life is that, Lucas, right? And he worked with top independent financial advisors, serving pre-retirees and retirees to build plans to align with their long-term goals and not let being grandma or parent get in the way of all that. He actually started Level Up Financial Planning, LLC, to bring financial planning to younger professionals and growing families. So thank you so much for being here with us today, Lucas.
Thanks, Judy. And thanks, Sandy, for having me today.
Yeah, Lucas, when we first connected and you talked about working with young people and then mentioned this bridge to what the parents are doing and how that affects their future, it really did. It, as you heard Judy and I talking about, it made me go, yes, that's the big issue. And after that, I started noticing even more in my conversations with parents, online, offline, the college and the launching years seem to be the biggest problem time for parents. And I'm just wondering, with the kids living at home longer, with them, a lot of them having more difficulties getting started, getting on their feet, and the craziness of college expenses, not just tuition, but all these extras, what I'm wondering is what you see about how that is actually in the real world impacting parents' futures.
Yeah, I'd say from my previous experience at my previous firm, when I was working with more of those clients where their children were either going through college or just finished college, you can see that there was a huge burning desire for those folks I was serving to provide assistance in any way possible. And sometimes it went past the point of, yeah, this is significantly going to impact your future, because all of a sudden your child wants to extend schooling and get a master's or something along those lines. And that's just an additional cost as well. And there's less opportunity for financial aid and things like that once you start extending those programs. So the biggest thing I saw was that there's just a huge emotional pull to kind of support children during this time, especially because the cost of school alone is so much higher. It's gone up so much more than the rest of the other expenses that we face in the normal day-to-day. So with the exception of maybe medical expenses and medical costs, school for college as well as the medical costs have just skyrocketed over the last 10, 20 years. And that's what's freaking parents out. And the kids really don't know anything. They're going into it, and if they've had conversations with their parents, they may think that their parents are just going to take care of it for them, and they're not really thinking all that much about it. And I think that's really where the biggest learning opportunity comes, is from possibly having your child start doing that research and start acting as if they're going to pay for it fully, so that they can take it a little bit more seriously. And even if you are going to be in the position to help, at least they're starting to understand how all the different mechanics work, from paying for it, and then researching what the different possible career opportunities are once they graduate. Because I think that's the second biggest thing. So not only are a lot of people taking out student loans, a lot of times they're graduating and they're not finding those opportunities that are actually going to allow them to pay off their student loans in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have two big things there, and one is this kid piece, and I definitely want to get back to that, but I want to go unpack this parent piece just a little bit more first. And here's the thing is, our kids hit college, and generally speaking, in our generation, parents are, late 40s, early 50s, and it can still feel like you have time to catch up and retirement is a ways away. Is that a reasonable thought, or is that problematic thinking for us?
It is problematic thinking, and it is, that's not just for that generation either. That's the easiest thing to do to make an excuse of why you should be spending more now and not necessarily keeping that eye on the future. So the clients I'm serving now have that same problem, and the clients I was serving before had that same issue, where it's a lot easier to try to justify whatever we want to spend our money on today, saying that, oh, we'll have time in the future to make it up. It's probably more problematic though, because it's less accurate for those generation that's getting closer to retirement. So if you're in your late 40s, early 50s, you only have maybe a decade or around about that amount of time in order to truly make up that ground. So if you think that you could make it up in that time period, then it's definitely possible, and it helps you kind of be able to swallow making those different sacrifices and helping out during that crucial time period in their children's life. But at the same time, I think a lot of people are not realistic with how much work they're going to have to do in order to make up that ground. So you'll have to start cutting other expenses. And I'm sure it's covered a lot of times in your other podcasts. It's just that dependency factor. And at what point do you start to kind of wean them off? Because if they become so dependent, depending on how you're kind of funding their lifestyle and education and things like that, if that continues on, that's going to not give you that time that you thought you were going to have in order to recoup those expenses. So I think whenever you're thinking about doing these types of things, it's really good to have a hard, honest reality check with yourself and say, well, if we're going to do this, what are those boundaries? And I know Judy kind of mentioned that earlier, and I think it's huge when you're talking about parents and how they're going to be interacting with children and helping children, is what boundaries are you going to kind of preset for yourself to make sure that you're doing what you need to do in order to, like, and Sandy, you mentioned it, kind of living in their children's basement. So that's a fear of both the children and the parent, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's really my granny pod. My daughter tells me she'll build me a granny pod in her backyard.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Lucas, as you're talking about this, instantly my head goes to what skills we're teaching our kids. I mean, in hearing what you're saying, it's this whole dependent mindset that we're not helping them shift to take responsibility for their choices. And there's this gap between what is a want and a need. And we tend to, as parents, fill that gap. So my question to you is, how do we stop that cycle? You mentioned the cycle of justify and we'll make it up later. You know, justify our expenses now and make it up later. How do we stop that cycle within ourselves and teach our kids not to get in that or perpetuate that cycle?
I think the biggest thing is just being open about kind of what your plans are with your children and how you feel that they should have to start taking on more responsibility, more accountability for their goals that they're starting to define as they're young in their adulthood. And I think that's something that's going to empower them to be able to make those choices and start to create their own boundaries too, and start to gain some momentum as far as being able to be less dependent on their parents. And I agree. I think more than any financial help that a parent could be providing, especially at that kind of later stage in the childhood and early adulthood, being able to give them those other skills that are going to allow them to be successful. So being able to overcome defeats and being able to plan on their own and kind of strategize on their own, I think is going to give them a lot of empowerment to start building out that life that they want to. And they'll start researching those things and understanding, hey, this is how the real world works. And there are trade-offs. And that's one of the things where when they are dependent, they're not able to actually have those kind of mental exercises of, well, there are trade-offs in life that come up a lot more frequently than if your parents subsidize in your lifestyle. And you have to adjust to that, especially if your parents are really well off, and or if you as a parent listening to this are really well off and they've had a great lifestyle up until now. At some point, they're going to have to come to the realization that that was mom and dad's money, and now they're starting to build up to what is going to be their future, and they're going to have control over what their future looks like. It may not be as comfortable, but they can start to decide on what's truly important to them and what's going to help them achieve their goals moving forward.
That's a really interesting point that you made there. That was my lifestyle with mom and dad, but what do I need to do to have the lifestyle I want to have? Or what does what I want to do and this passion I want to follow, what kind of lifestyle does that allow me to have? That, I don't know if that's a conversation that we even think to have with our kids about that differentiation. And, you know, and when do we draw that line in the sand for them? So I really like that. And what I'm wondering is, you work with young adults. That's your area of passion now, is to really help people who are starting out. What I'm curious about, Lucas, is like, as you're working, to us, they're still kids. So as you work with these kids,
yep.
Can you tell from your side of the desk, can you tell which parents did the hard work of setting some boundaries and, you know, maybe letting the kids flounder a little financially and making them do that research? You know, that's harder sometimes in the parenting world. Can you tell from the other side of the desk which people have had to do that and which haven't?
You definitely can. And I think it seems like a lot of the clients I'm helping currently had a more kind of middle-class kind of background. So it's not where their parents were able to overly fund. And so a lot of the people I'm helping now have student loans. And so they talk about how their parents helped them. But at some point, a lot of the people I'm helping now worked in their teenage years and had to kind of fund a lot of stuff, buy their first cars and things. So they are more intentional, I think, is really why they're even coming to me in the first place. They understand that money is not easy to come by, and they want to plan and make sure they're doing the best things with it. And I think that's due to their kind of background of understanding that your resources are limited. And so who I'm working with currently is a different background. I could tell you definitely when I was working with the previous kind of pre-retirees and retirees, when I'd be looking at their social security statements and looking at those types of things, and it may be similar to your backgrounds as well. A lot of the people that I was seeing with massive incomes started working when they were like 15. And so you could see it in their social security statement because they were making like $1,000 back 60 years ago. And so it's interesting to me when I see like really well-off people, really high earners that started working basically when they're in 15, 16, and now they're being paid like $300,000 a year for whatever it is that they're doing. I just find that interesting that a lot of times when I'm like, holy smokes, how did they get to where they were before to where they are now? And it may just be something I'm trying to draw a line to that doesn't really exist, but it's just really interesting to me when I see those higher earners, it looked like they had to put a lot more into it in their early years. And that's kind of what I'm seeing from it with the clients I'm working with, is they may have had some type of subsidization or just parents that were helpful in other ways. And so the children who range from like 40 years old to 23 years old are just a lot more intentional at being aware that they don't want to make mistakes and that they only have so many shots to make those mistakes before they're unrecoverable.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to let our kids make the mistakes when they're younger, because then the consequences are less dramatic. You know, it takes me back to what we were talking about the very beginning. If we make a lot of mistakes now in our 50s, it's going to really impact us when we retire, as opposed to if we made a lot of mistakes in our 20s and learned the lessons then, the impact on our life, our quality of life, and our longevity of living that lifestyle that we want is very, very different. So what tips would you give not only kids, but parents to empower their kids, besides just talking? Do you have any, like, should they be starting some tangible, you know, savings plans or things like that to help them get those skills that you say can be lacking?
I could tell you a savings account just by itself probably isn't going to be too valuable. I know when I was younger, my mom actually went and we opened up a savings account, and it didn't do anything for me. And it's probably because we didn't have an actual plan in place. It was just like, hey, let's put this money here. And then I really don't even remember hearing anything else about it until like multiple years later, I think when I was turning 18, and then I was able to have access to it myself. Then all of a sudden I got a notification about it. And so just opening an account, I don't think is good enough. I think being more conversational, and you don't have to know everything. And there's so many resources now where if all you need to do is get your child to that place of interest, or to where they start asking questions, because then they can start finding those things and researching things themselves. And that's really those skills of curiosity and wanting to solve issues on their own. So you can just initiate that conversation and kind of get those juices flowing around these different thoughts, and it, be honest with them. If you don't know the answer, that don't make it up or lead them in the wrong direction. Just say, you know what, that's a good question. I have no clue how that would work. And and depending on the age, you may even want to sit down with them and say, hey, let's figure this out together, because this is going to be helpful to me, as well as just kind of give them that interest. Because if they see that you're taking an interest in it and it's serious to you, then they'll start trying to figure out how that all works. And and it's really hard to teach them everything all at once. So you'll want to kind of understand where their base level is and just kind of gradually increase their knowledge on different areas. So basically, or at the basic levels, you'll want to talk about why you work for a living, why, especially if you're busy a lot of times. I know I see a lot of people on like Facebook and LinkedIn when they had to have those conversations, like, why are you never home? Well, I have to work, and you have these different things that you're able to do because of the work that I'm doing. So it's fine to have those conversations. I think it's helpful for your child to understand that that money doesn't grow on trees. Then I think the biggest thing where just the whole US is lacking is that expenses. And I don't remember, Sandy or Judy, which one of you mentioned it, but there's those wants versus needs. And too often these days, wants are thought of as needs, and it's because of those kind of that history of building up of all those different expenses, all the different things that we've had in the past, where we think it essentially becomes a need just because we've had it the rest of our life, or we've always been able to get those types of things. But there's still wants in a lot of situations. Needs are very identifiable. You'll die or you'll be harmed if you don't have those things. Wants or all those things that are luxuries and may make life just a little bit better. But going through that conversation of wants versus needs, why you work and how you're kind of saving and trying to build for your future and plan ahead. I think leading by example is probably the hardest thing to do. But if you're able to do it, it's going to have a dramatic impact if you're able to kind of share openly and not kind of have your walls up around what your financial situation is or what your goals and financial plans are.
So in there, you were talking about helping them understand about money. And so I can see where that would tie back to some of our opening conversation about letting them have more financial responsibility in their life and drawing some of those boundaries, not providing everything. So besides having conversations with our kids, it might be the conversation that parents need to have with each other, where you're in, whether you're in the same household or different ones, of, hey, yes, it's our job to cover their needs, but not our job to cover all their wants. And sometimes they get turned around too. Like, we're just going through this whole smartphone thing in our house, you know. I won't even discuss why I'm switching, because it's stressing me out and making me a mess. But anyhow, so I'm doing the new computer, new phone thing. Well, one daughter's phone died, the other one, the screen cracked. And we had always told our kids they were responsible. Once they went to smartphones, they were responsible for paying for their own phones. And somehow in the midst of all this craziness, I'd gotten the thought in my head again that I needed to make sure they had a phone. And when I spent some time going, wait a minute, you know, what's with this thought? I realized that, yes, I do need to give them a phone because we don't have a home phone. So having a phone is a need. But you know what? It doesn't have to be an iPhone XS or, you know, a Samsung, I don't even know what number they're on, or a Google Pixel. Yep. For them to be able to make a phone call and get a text message, which is the actual need there in my kids' lives. You know, yes, they would think they need their phone to be connected to the internet and everything else. They have computers and tablets that can do that. So my responsibility is to make sure they're safe, which means call and text. And so once I, you know, stepped back from that and got myself back in that place of, this is what I would need to provide, then I came back to anything else beyond that is up to them to decide. And they get really creative about doing those things and about coming up with ways to pay for what they want. Or we find out that what we thought was really important to them isn't so important. Like my one daughter went, well, I'll take your old work phone, Mom. That's fine with me. Even though it, yeah, technically it's a smartphone, but it was the free one I got with the fifth account. You know, it was some cheapy thing. But it does what she needs to do, and it's not worth it to her to spend any more money on it. So it was just, it was this piece of going, yeah, you know, you said get curious, teach them to be curious, to research things, to get involved in that, encourage that curiosity. I think one of the ways we encourage that curiosity is by giving them a reason to even think or research about something, and that's giving them financial responsibility for some of the pieces of their life, not just automatically assuming that we're going to cover the cost of, you know, any trade school they want or the college of their dreams.
And it doesn't start when they are teenagers in junior, senior in high school. What I'm hearing from both of you, and I didn't mean to jump in here, but I kind of did, because it's one of those things that if we start when they're young and they say, I want that, you know, Lunchable, or I want that toy, LOL is the thing that my granddaughter wants, right? If we start then and say, all right, what can you do to earn the money to get that and help them walk through the process, it sends the message that it's not our responsibility to get them the things they want. And I think if we start it when they're way young, we won't be dipping into our finances and our resources that are supposed to be for our retirement when they want to go to off on like the trip you were talking about, Sandy, at the beginning, you know, study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll go, oh, I want to do this. This isn't a need. So I need to do exactly what Lucas is telling us, do the research and figure out how to pay to do that privilege, because that's a want, not a need. So it's just that thing of, if you haven't done it, you can start now. But if you're listening and know someone with little ones, encourage them to start that way young.
Yep, Judy, I agree. My son's a year and a half old right now, and he's getting to that point when we go into the store, he notices what toys are. And so, obviously he's not going to be earning stuff, but he's also not getting things that he points at, because I'd be massively in debt if we started picking everything off the shelf. Mm-hmm. But I do want to revisit back on Sandy's kind of example, because I think it's super powerful. Just think, Sandy, if you didn't stop yourself from that momentum that was gonna originally kind of take you to helping them subsidize that phone expense, stuff that maybe they didn't value anyways, they would have lost that opportunity of growth, of being able to think creatively and alternatively just have that thought process of, well, what do I need versus what I want, and what's actually going to work for me. Like if you would have just took care of it for them, which a lot of people do for their children, because it feels nice. It feels like it's something you should be doing. I don't think there are a lot of shoulds that we should stick to when it comes to kind of financial assistance, especially when it's on that want side versus the need. But just think, Sandy, if you didn't do that, then your children wouldn't have been able to go through this exercise of growth. And so that's really impactful for me, just that example that you use, because I just think of that could have potentially changed a lot of their future trajectory on how they view other expenses when they are adults. And really, they don't have that backup of the parent's phone to be able to utilize for a short-term time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Lucas, I want to get into true financial planner territory for a minute. So, you know, our kids, and I don't even know when this would start, you know, from a financial planning perspective for their own future, you know, what steps would you suggest that we mention to them, lean toward, and what, at what ages is that appropriate? You know, from 5 to 25 or whatever, from a financial planner standpoint, because that's a little different from, you know, budgeting day-to-day stuff, that you have a different perspective on that long-term future and meeting goals and things like that.
Yeah. So from a financial planning perspective for kind of those young children, I think the biggest thing that you can focus on, like Judy said, is early on, just let them know there's a huge difference, like a dramatic difference between a want versus a need. Mm-hmm. And then as they start to get older, you can start helping them kind of review a situation and have conversations with them about, well, how does this compare to this other thing? And you can start out initially by having like two different types of cell phones or whatever it is you're trying to compare, and help them kind of work through that value exercise and what's truly valuable to them. Because Sandy, like you said, there were some features that weren't even probably valuable to your children. So why are you just going to pay for something that they may not even find value in anyways? And I don't know why the example hits so strongly for me, but I do know that my parents spoiled me a little bit more than what my wife was kind of like spoiled and kind of those types of things when she was growing up. So I know that I took a lot of the stuff my parents did for granted when I was in my teens, because I didn't really think about it. I was like, I didn't have to think about it. If they were going to be giving me a cell phone and they were going to be paying for my vehicle, I truly didn't really understand what that was until I was in my 20s and living on my own. And that I'm thankful that they did it, but I do realize and notice that the people that had to at least kind of partially pay or kind of match whatever their parents' assistance was, that seemed to make a difference as far as how people progress financial planning wise. So I think super early, I'll just kind of revisit on that again really quick. Really early, just that difference between wants versus needs. And then when you are in that position, or your child's in the position to save and get some of those wants, start comparing things apples to apples at that point. Then kind of the next evolution of that is apples to oranges. Your money could be utilized for anything. It doesn't have to be for this phone or that phone. It could be for this phone or that trip, and or a lower scale phone and a lower scale trip, and you can do both. So trying to understand constraints of economic standpoint. So economics is just being able to efficiently use your assets and resources that you have. And so basically we're all our own individual kind of pods of economic systems. And so the child in the family system is pretty similar, where there's economic constraints and you can be creative. And I think there's a lot of growth that could come from that creativity of trying to just compare those different things, whether they're the same or just different alternatives that you can choose to spend your money on, even if they don't fill that same need. And different people value different things. And just because one person finds a lot of value in this particular phone doesn't mean that everyone's going to. And if they're able to start analyzing things in that detail early on, it's going to help them tremendously, because that the biggest problem I see just across all the generations of kind of the working force is people think they're doing really good at living and not going into debt, but basically they're spending every single cent of their paycheck and they're not really making progress on any other goals. And it's because they fall into that trap of thinking that they need all these different things and that all these different things are going to add value to them because their friend or their neighbor has these things. And that's not always the case. People start developing their own values and tastes. And if you haven't kind of honed in on what is truly valuable to you, then it gets really tricky. And you do make a lot of mistakes of buying things and not actually utilizing them. There's a lot of people that buy fitness equipment and they never use it, or they buy a lot of clothes and never end up wearing them and they just stay in the closet. So there's a lot of examples of people that don't ever understand kind of that value process of what's going to actually truly add value to your life. And so we just waste money essentially, even if we have a product or a good sitting around, we're not actually utilizing it. So really it's useless and it's a waste of funds.
So what I have so far is, you know, when they're really young, start with the wants versus needs. As they get older, get into value exercise conversations. We need to give over some financial responsibility for their life so that they learn, either let them pay for things or match it. What about things like starting a 401k? Or you said with saving, I missed this one too. So savings account, we want to, yes, help them open a savings account, but help them figure out a plan for that. What about things like 401ks or learning about investments? Are those appropriate things to talk to when they're in high school or college, or wait till they graduate?
Yeah, I think investments you can do just generally, even if it's not a retirement account. So I think that's something where probably right around the early teens, those younger age children would still be able to start understanding, I know what Disney is. I know what Apple is. I understand their companies. I understand they need to make money and stuff like that. So those are really great conversations you could start having in those kind of early years of the teens and kind of throughout their whole high school career. As far as retirement accounts go, you could definitely start talking to them about your own retirement plan at that point. Unless they have earned income of their own, they're not going to be eligible to make contributions to a 401k or an IRA or a Roth account. The cool thing is, if they do have like a summer job or something, as long as they're not being paid under the table or something like that, they're actually paying in taxes and Social Security, Medicare, and all that stuff, then they can actually begin contributing to an IRA account or a Roth account. I definitely recommend a Roth account because they're going to be super low tax situation. But yeah, those conversations, as soon as they start earning their own money, then I think it's very important to say, what is your plan for savings? Because you're not spending this all. If you got a summer job, just be aware you're saving 15%, 20%, whatever it is. You can kind of give them parameters if you want. It can be anywhere between here and here. This is why I think you should do this, but feel free to research it and come up on your own. Some children take the initiative and they save a lot more than what you'd expect. And some say, hey, if you gave me that lower minimum, I'm going to take that lower minimum and then spend the rest on what I want.
And it seems like that's a good place to go, okay, I'll match. Because they have, I don't remember what the maximum amount is that they can put into in a Roth IRA at that young age, but it would basically typically be everything they earned that, you know, they would be able to put in, and they're not going to do that. So that seems like a great place to go. Hey, if you're putting in 25% or more, I will match it.
Yep. And Sandy, I think the kind of whole overview of this whole conversation is if you can afford to do it, if it's yeah, something that's going to fit into your financial plan, then yes. Where a lot of people run into problems is they say things because they sound really good, and then they're like, oh man, hopefully they don't save that much because really this is going to be tight. Like, I don't know how we're going to do it. So yeah, just having a realistic understanding of where you could help and do those things. But when there is, if you do have that wherewithal to be able to assist in those financial situations, then yeah, matching on kind of a vehicle savings plan. So if they're starting to save for their first vehicle purchase and you want to match there and can afford to do it, those are definitely better than just saying, hey, I'm going to buy it for you. Don't worry about that money you earned. Go spend that on anything else you want. So matching's a really good kind of additional benefit if you have that situation available. But if you don't feel bad at all. That's you're like a majority of the population where most people have a fine line of being able to make it to retirement and be able to afford the things that they want to afford on their own. And so you don't necessarily have to feel that pressure to do those matching situations. But what you can do is give your child the basic knowledge and understanding and reasoning for why these things are important to research and dig into. And like I said, you don't have to know the answers, but it would be really powerful if you sat down and figured them out together with them and yeah, got those wheels churning for them.
Do you have any like words to say or information? Because as you're talking, part of me goes, okay, we now in hindsight know the importance as we get closer and closer to retirement age. We know the importance of having enough for when, you know, we stop working and the income that's coming in decreases. How can we kind of impart that insight into our kids when they're younger so that they can really and truly implement all the things you've told us to do in this podcast? It almost seems like that foundation of understanding is so important, and somehow there has to be a way that we can share that importance and help them really understand it early on. You know, everything is this instant gratification right now. And our kids are used to, if they want to understand something, they just ask Google and it's instantly at their fingertips, you know? And I just see this disconnect between the value of investing and saving for retirement. I don't think they're seeing it early enough. Even us as parents, we don't put enough value on it. So from the financial planning standpoint, is there any insight you can give us that would maybe flip that switch to make us realize that living paycheck to paycheck has so many more implications in the long run than right now?
Yeah, and so Judy, I think the biggest thing, I mentioned a couple of times, is just having that conversation and explaining why you have a certain stance. And you could tell them that you have a financial plan. It's very important because there's a lot of people that don't do these things and they end up struggling. And depending on where your child's age is, when you're explaining that to them, and it you'll want to make it appropriate for their understanding and kind of level there. But if you were going to tell like a teenager, you're like, hey, I'm going to have to live with you because we haven't been able to do the things that,
but that right there, I think would be all the incentive that they would need to start saving for their own future. Hey, we can subsidize you, but then we're living with you.
Yep. Yeah. And so I think those teenage years, that would be something that would be very incentivizing. But say the alternative is we can continue doing what we've been doing and planning for a future where we may be able to help you if an emergency comes up. But really, we're hoping to get you to the place where you're going to be very self-reliant and be able to make important decisions, and we're always going to be here as a resource for you. But we have our own kind of goals and things that we need to make sure we protect ourselves because we don't want to fail you in that way and have to live with you in the future. And obviously that's a different conversation. If you're speaking with someone, a child that's 5 years old, 10 years old, you can just tell them that if we end up not having money in the future, it's going to be like really sad or something. You talk at levels that is going to kind of make them understand. And if you have kind of previous investments, right now would be a good time to just kind of show them an overview. This is how much it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever it is. If you kind of had that historical data, this is what it's grown to now. And so that's the benefit of this is going to help me not have to work in the future. And if they have grandparents, you can kind of talk about how they're not working anymore. And so their income is really restricted if they didn't have investments and savings to kind of help them kind of get through those retirement years.
I love those tangible things.
Yep. One of the things that I did with my girls, we mentioned the IRA and, you know, the concept of it. We did not match, but as soon as they had earned income, I talked to them about opening Roth IRAs. And what I did is I showed them the example, and Lucas, you tell me if I mess this up because it's been a very long time. It's what my mother used to encourage me to do it when I started working. And that was, I showed them the example of what happens if you start at age 20, you start putting $1,000 a year into a Roth IRA, and you do that for 10 years. And I put it in a spreadsheet, and I just calculated at 7% interest how much money they would have. And then the other person, their friend, started putting $1,000 a year in at age 30 and continued until they retired at 65. Mm-hmm. And you actually had more money by starting and doing it from age 20 to 30, just $10,000 total in those 10 years. You ended up with more money than if you start at age 30 and do it for 35 years. And that, even my daughter, who wishes money didn't exist, even her eyes lit up, and they both opened Roth IRAs and went and did that. Because that they got was like, okay, I'll put the money away now, and then I don't have to worry so much later.
Yeah, yeah. The power of compound interest is strong. And yeah, depending on the ages, and I think probably right around the teenage years would be a good time to kind of show those different comparisons. And one thing that it's, you probably didn't even realize is just having that habit of doing something like that for 10 years. What happens a lot of times is, people start to create kind of new habits around that. And so they'll continue that. It's not like they're going to do it for 10 years and stop because that's what you showed them was possible. They're going to be like, oh, this is great. What happens if I continue to do this? And so people that start to have those early successes and I call it financial confidence. And that's kind of how I approach it with, it's kind of like my mission statement says, I want to help my clients take their financial confidence to the next level, because I think that's really impactful. Once you start to build that momentum and that confidence, it allows you to understand how much control you actually do have over your financial situation. And it's things like that definitely help build that confidence. Is, yep, I've been saving now. Now I have 2,000. Now I have 3,000. This feels good. I never want to go backwards from here. And so it helps them build a lot of momentum. And in a situation like for me, starting my company is super scary to leave income and things of that nature. But basically, because I did what I needed to in my early years of work, and it allowed me to kind of have that bridge to take this chance, where I know some other advisors do it without having the proper kind of funding and things like that. And they really have to be successful instantly, or they're going to kind of flame out. So that financial confidence is a big thing for me. And it's a big thing for people once they start to gain that.
I like that term, financial confidence. And that's, I think, a great term for what we want to build in our kids. So you've told us we want to have conversations with them, talk to them about all these different areas, the wants versus needs, the value exercise, give them financial responsibility, start not just talking to them, but as they get older, help them, yes, open the savings account or an IRA, and, you know, maybe do investments, or suggest to family members that when they don't know what to buy the kids, you know, give them a little stock or whatever. But also to continue the conversations and help our kids have plans around those things. We also need to, which is where we started this conversation, we need to be very careful and very conscious about our own financial choices, especially as our kids hit those late teens, 20s, launching years. Make sure that we are making choices that will not put both our future and then theirs at risk, where we're going to be in a place where we can't care for ourselves and they would have to do it. Or to even put us in a place where, yes, maybe we still have our needs and not necessarily our wants, and then end up resenting our children because we made financial choices that were not really in our best interest and ultimately then theirs. So Lucas, this has been a good enlightening conversation. I love that you caught me out there when I said, hey, match. And you're like, whoa, wait, that's not where we started. So that was awesome.
And it's really easy to get to those points, right? You steadily start to change your mind shift, and all of a sudden you're way, way further than where you originally expected you were going to be. It almost happened with you on the cell phone situation. You said it's really easy to want to give and give and give, and then all of a sudden be a little bit outside of your bounds of where it makes sense for you.
Yeah. So for people who are going, hey, I want to learn more from him, or maybe they have, 20 or 30 somethings who are looking for a financial advisor who gets that side of things, where would people find you?
Sure. Yep. Best place would be my website. So it's levelupfinancialplanning.com. I think you guys were going to actually kind of put that in the podcast information, right?
Yeah, it's in our show notes.
Yep, so perfect. I'd say visit the show notes, click on that link. That would be the best way. I try to be as transparent as possible, which I know is horrible in the industry because they're typically not. So my price, and you can kind of estimate costs for yourself or your children if they're young adults working. Then one thing that's not on my site that I kind of have a single page, so it got too overwhelming, so I removed it, but I do have hourly services as well. So it could be purely educational based, it could be coaching based, it could be working through budgeting. So a lot of information on my website on those types of things. But yeah, I truly enjoy helping people just kind of get to that next level of understanding. So it could be education, or it could just be reaching different milestones and having an understanding. I think a lot of the clients that I make a dramatic impact on are young couples, actually. So people that are trying to integrate finances, because everyone has their own money backgrounds. I think that's where I make probably the biggest impact. So I know it's a tricky situation when you're integrating those finances and everyone has their own different goals, and their parents supported them differently potentially as they were earning or as they were growing up. So I understand there's a lot of emotional aspects there of trying to get those things all figured out.
Mm-hmm. And Lucas, I totally appreciate the transparency in that. And it's refreshing to me to hear a financial planner talk about the emotional side and how it impacts our choices. So I am excited. And if you've been listening to us for the first time today, you just got a goldmine of information and an awesome resource that can help you help your kids and empower yourself to move forward in your finances. And we just want to thank you for being here on the Mighty Parenting Podcast and being part of our community. If you haven't been to our website at mightyparenting.com, you can go there to see all the support we have for you. And if you are eating up our podcast and have not gotten enough, you can become a member of our Patreon community. Not only does that support us in keeping things commercial free, but it also provides you with behind the scenes information, extra interviews, and more resources that can help you be a mighty parent. This is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler, and we will see you next week.